Welcome back. Here we are. Maynard Woods joins us once again, the managing editor of the Baltimore City Paper, which means it's Wednesday and the new edition of the City Paper is in the streets. And Maynard's on the phone, or ISDN, wherever you are.
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Mark?
Good, Maynard. How are you?
Doing real well.
So this is a really interesting issue. I mean, let me start with a piece that that you did with the Marley play that just opened up at Center Stage.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fascinating piece because Brandon Soderbergh and Lawrence Birney had been hanging around watching the rehearsals for a while, and then everything happened surrounding Freddie Gray, and it really made the play so much more relevant, and especially when they went out, the cast of the play went out and performed some of the songs from the play at the corner of Pennsylvania and North Avenues, and so it was this really powerful moment that brought a lot of the political content of the play and what was going on in Kwame Kwayarma's play, you know, in Trenchtown and Bob Marley's life to Sandtown here. So it was pretty interesting timing and really makes the play super relevant. I haven't seen it yet, but I can't wait.
I can't wait either. I'm seeing it tomorrow night. As a matter of fact, I can't wait to see the play. I know tonight's opening night for the press and stuff, but I'll be catching it tomorrow and looking forward to that. But I'm curious, when you were there, people were covering it. When people were covering the City Paper, watching rehearsals, what was the reaction to the actors and to Kwame when this happened?
So yeah, I mean, at the Penn and North, it was really a moving reaction from people seeing this, you know, really coming together and this music that really, I think, to almost everyone sort of symbolizes peace and unity, and that's what the period in Marley's life that it focuses on, that the play focuses on, is when rival gangs associated with the political parties, he was trying to get them to come together, and there's an assassination attempt on him. And so I think it was really both for the cast to be able to go out there and do that, and then for the people in the street to see them doing that. It brought, you know, we tend to think of sometimes, especially the larger theaters, Center Stage and Everyman is a little bit separate from the city that they're in. And I think this was a really great move that Kwame did to bring the play out into the streets.
So you also covered a piece I want to ask you about in the City Papers. I was reading it as quickly as I could when I saw it online today. But there is this opera play coming to 2640 Space, Stinney.
It's really another amazing play that has been brought to an extraordinary relevance. This is a play by a Peabody student, and it's about the youngest person ever executed in America, a guy whose last name is Stinney, where the name of the opera comes from. And he was so short, he was 14 years old, he was accused of murdering two white girls in South Carolina in the 40s, and they had to put him on a book so that he was tall enough to get electrocuted. And his conviction was overturned a couple of years ago. And so she wrote this really moving opera about this with a really jazz-based score. And it really is going to be also a really relevant and timely performance.
I'm interested. I didn't know about that until I saw it in the City Paper. And Evan wrote a piece about Marlon Mosby taking stage with Prince.
Yeah, it was, you know, what a weird thing that was for her to come up on the stage there. The Prince performance in general.
Were you there?
I wasn't there. Evan was there, and I couldn't. They didn't give us tickets to the performance.
You couldn't afford the $500?
I couldn't afford the ticket to go see Prince. I've always thought that, you know, we made the caption when she was first had her inauguration. There was this weird purple light behind her, and we actually my favorite caption I've done at the paper was calling it Purple Rain. I've always thought she looked sort of remarkably like Prince. But I can't see what she could have gained politically from that. With people questioning her as it is, to go up on stage with Prince seemed like a sort of ill-timed moment for her. But yeah, that was another odd moment in this super odd couple weeks. And you know, this you had talked about having him on the show. One of the pieces that I feel is really, I wrote this piece about Meech Tucker, Robert
yes,
Tucker.
Yes, right.
And to me, he's really been sort of everywhere in the course of these last few weeks. And really, in some ways, to me, is such a symbol of Baltimore and what we are. So he, back right after Freddie Gray died. And he says he's Freddie Gray's cousin. And he was up on the wall when the police first put the wall up around the district office. And he was the first person that I heard talk about the treaty between the gangs, the truce between the gangs, saying, and also he was saying, and we're going to come after them. And so I think he was probably the source for the police's credible intelligence. I don't know that for sure, but he was, you know, he was standing there in front of them on the wall talking about this truce. He then later was photographed dancing with the rabbi.
Right.
He was in every video, every march. He's been right there at the front. And then last Monday, when Fox erroneously reported that someone had been shot by the police in the back, that was going all over Twitter. It was him, as it turned out, who was running from the police, tried to throw his gun away. It went off. He was ended up being arrested. They thought he had been shot, and Senator Pugh ended up arranging for him to be able to see his mom. And there's this video that Real News Network got, very sad video of him sort of crying as they're taking him off to jail. The same thing, he'd had been arrested doing exactly the same thing, running and trying to get rid of a gun in 2011, and the police had used him as a sort of bad guys with guns thing. And so he's just been this sort of zealot of the whole uprising who's been there at all of these crucial moments. And so I tried to piece together what we know about him, because he's just got so much heart when you see him, and but also like messing up sort of at various turns and doing these, you know, in kind of goofy ways. And so in some ways he's very much what Baltimore has felt like. And so I thought it was important to try to piece together who Meech is, what we know about him, and all of these sort of moments that he's popped up.
Is he still in jail?
He is still in jail. Or he was at press time. I haven't checked in the last couple of days. He was being held without bail.
I want to ask about some of the other articles, but before I do that, we have 5 minutes left here in this segment, Bay. I'm curious, what changes you've gone through and what you out of all your coverage. You all and Joe have been on the street the whole time doing some incredible coverage. I mean, just where do you come out of this at the end?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess this is a time that I could also mention in my column this week, I announced that I'm no longer going to be
right.
a full-time editor at the paper, but an editor at large, which one of the main reasons is to be able to be out on the street reporting more. And I've long felt that too many reporters spend too much time in the office. And so we'd already had that planned. And so it was, for me, it was a great way to, when something was just happened, to be able to go and actually be there. And it showed how important that is, that you can't find out everything from a computer. You can't find out everything from a desk. But, you know, and to see what people are really going through, I think we talked about this before, but when Joe and I were up there at the Western District Precinct at midnight, when the press wasn't there, and to see the way that the police acted to everyone else who was the people who lived there, and the way that it really felt like police occupation on that street, and how much there really are to Baltimore's, it really woke me up to the vast importance of continuing to report on that and making sure that we as a paper get outside of the white L and get outside of the people who want to talk to us, who are used to, who know how to send the press releases and say, hey, I'm doing this thing tomorrow night, y'all come out, and have their sort of script ready of what to tell us. And to see the people who don't expect us to be there but are grateful to have us there, to have the people who are trying to get by with their lives and what they're doing is really important. That's where I want to be, is where those people are, and where those people are, and be able to watch the other people who don't want us to be there, the police, those in power who don't want us to be looking at what they're doing. I think that is crucially more important. And so I still greatly value all of the contribution of all the artists in the community and look forward to participating in and watching that. But I feel like my reporting needs to go much more towards watching the powerful who don't want us to be watching, and watching the powerless who are grateful to have us there watching. And
Bainard, I really appreciate those thoughts, and I'm sorry we won't be doing this much anymore on Wednesdays, but we'll have all the folks in the city paper. I'm really happy about your book being optioned and working on that as well, and this new work you're doing. Look forward to continuing talking on the air about the work you actually do, maybe just in the studio talking about it. It's great to have you back here again. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll have more time to come in the studio.
That'd be great.
That's a
So Baynard Woods, managing editor of the Baltimore City Paper. This is our Wednesday look at the city paper. You can just pop it out of the box across the city. Make sure you do. It's in the coverage there in the city paper has been amazing around this Baltimore uprising. Baynard Woods, thank you so much, brother. Always good to talk to you.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our engineering intern is Anthony Nichols. Our intern and Dan History Research Producer is Sienna Greaves. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cut. And what you're hearing right now is Prince, Darling Nikki. On this day in 1985, Tipper Gore formed the Parents Music Resource Center in an effort to pressure the recording industry to establish a rating system for albums and concerts similar to that exists in the movies. They ended up compromising and establishing a parental advisory sticker. And because of Prince, the man who tried to bring some peace to Baltimore over the weekend. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.